UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Through the hormones it produces, the thyroid gland influences almost all of the metabolic processes in your body. As a result, thyroid disorders can be far-reaching and can range from nodules to hypothyroidism to life-threatening cancer. Here today in a panel discussion regarding thyroid cancer and thyroid disease are Dr. Benjamin Green, Dr. Brian Hughley, and Dr. Aaron Buchek. They are head and neck surgeons at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, doctors. Dr. Buchek, I'd like to start with you. Please explain a little bit about thyroid disease. How common is it, and what are the different types that you see?
Excellent question. There are several different types of thyroid disease. There are metabolic thyroid diseases, such as Graves' disease or hyperthyroidism. Also commonly, there's something called hypothyroidism, where the thyroid is less active and producing less thyroid hormone. There are also diseases, autoimmune diseases of the thyroid, such as Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which usually results in hypothyroidism long-term. Additionally, we see anatomic problems with the thyroid. Most commonly, we see thyroid nodules, and you can also see thyroid cancers as well that start in the thyroid gland and can go elsewhere in the body.
So, Dr. Green, patients with abnormalities of the thyroid gland function or structure come to medical attention for several reasons. Give us some of those reasons.
So, you know, most of the time, to be honest, it's found on routine labs because people don't feel well for some reason. You know, and what they feel is if people have an overactive thyroid gland, people tend to not be able to sleep. They're losing weight. They're always hungry. They have a tremor. They feel like they can never, they're restless and things like that. And people that have a low thyroid kind of have the opposite. They're having fatigue, weight gain, despite eating the same amount of food. Their hair is falling out. You know, their nails are becoming brittle. Those are things for, you know, metabolic thyroid problems that people usually complain about. And usually they're usually not coming to a head and neck surgeon with those kind of complaints. They're usually seeing their primary doctor and saying, you know, doc, I really just feel terrible and I don't know why. And ask a couple questions, get some lab work and find out that the thyroid is not functioning the way it's supposed to.
Dr. Hughley, what might some of those reasons be? Are we looking at lack of iodine? I mean, you certainly have to have an understanding of thyroid disease and the interpretation of this function to get that basic understanding. What are you looking at?
Well, that is true. The lack of iodine worldwide, is a very big cause of thyroid disease. However, we don't see that much in the United States. There are certainly familial inherited thyroid diseases that run in certain families that can cause both cancers as well as benign physiologic dysfunction.
So let's talk about treatments now. And Dr. Green, back to you for a minute. When we're talking about clinical tests and diagnosis, then what would be the first line of treatment? Because it's not really always going to be surgical in nature. Speak about some of the medicational intervention you might encounter.
Well, mostly what you'll see is people having low thyroid, you know, having not enough thyroid hormone. And that can be due to a number of reasons, like Dr. Hughley said, or it can be most commonly is due to something called Hashimoto's thyroiditis, where people have an autoimmune reaction to the thyroid gland that causes it to produce not enough thyroid hormone. And the treatment of that is just replacing the thyroid hormone. And that's one of the safest medications that you can give because it's literally just the exact same hormone and replacing it. And so what that's usually done under the care of a family medicine or internal medicine doctor or an endocrinologist to make sure that they are giving enough but not too much thyroid hormone replacement therapy. Now, there are some intricacies that come into it when people are producing too much thyroid hormone, and there are medications that we usually start with, such as propylthiouracil, to stop the thyroid from producing so much hormone and help with some of the feedback mechanisms that cause it to keep producing hormone. And Those are a little bit more tricky to give and are usually given under the direction of an endocrinologist to make sure that people are getting the correct amount, getting treated well. And also, you know, it's very difficult to treat patients with these medications if they're planning on getting pregnant or things like that. So usually those are directed by an endocrinologist for people who have Graves' disease or hyperactive thyroid hormone.
Important points all. So let's veer off for a minute. And Dr. Buchek, what about nodules, thyroid nodules, and how are they treated specifically? When is a needle biopsy needed? When is observation indicated? And when might surgery be indicated?
That's an excellent question. So to start off with, thyroid nodules are extremely common. Amongst a mix of studies, they're palpable in somewhere between 2 to 6% of the population. And thyroid nodules can be found on autopsy studies in up to half of the population. So they're extremely common. And most importantly, most thyroid nodules, up to 90 to 95% of them, end up being benign. So the question as clinicians that we've been working on sorting out is exactly which nodules do we determine to be benign and how do we figure that out and trying to avoid surgery, since surgery is the most definitive way to figure that out, since we can send the entire nodule to the pathologist to look at. But the goal for us is to figure out who is safe to watch and who do we need to take to surgery. So one of the most important tools that we have is ultrasound. So ultrasound is a non-invasive technique. It doesn't involve any external radiation and allows us to evaluate the structure of the thyroid gland and the surrounding lymph nodes. There are a lot of characteristics on ultrasound as well as on palpation that can lend you to think that a nodule might be more concerning. Size is one of them. So traditionally it used to be anything greater than a centimeter, but depending on the appearance of the nodule, we now say a centimeter and a half to 2 centimeters. Is the nodule cystic or is it solid? Does it have well-defined edges? Is it particularly vascular? We use all of these different data points to grade these nodules. And depending on whether a nodule is concerning enough or not to meet what we call biopsy criteria. And so if it meets criteria, we do a fine needle aspiration. Nodules that don't meet that criteria, we consider to be very low risk for malignancy, and those are considered safe for observation. Observation usually means an ultrasound within about a year, potentially less if they change. The nodules that are deemed biopsy worthy, we'll do a needle biopsy, and we send that off to the pathologist to look at and grade and tell us whether or not they are either benign, whether they are suspicious for malignancy, whether they are malignant, or whether they're uncertain. And now we actually have some genetic testing tools to look at that uncertain category to tell us whether they have concerning molecular features that would make us think that they were more likely to be malignant or not. And based on the results of the biopsy determines whether or not we recommend further observation or whether or not we recommend surgical removal of the nodule.
The one thing I would add is that occasionally in the workup of a nodule, it's actually too large to recommend a biopsy. If they are 4 centimeters or larger is the typical cutoff. We will recommend actually taking that side of the gland out, assuming all other things are normal, to get a more accurate diagnosis rather than a needle biopsy.
And if I can add something, that makes a lot of sense, because if something is larger than 4 centimeters, you know, and you're just taking one small tiny needle sample of it, the question is a cancer hiding in there and you just didn't hit it with this very small needle? You know, it's called a fine needle aspiration biopsy, and it is a very, very fine needle. But also, there's something new in the line of ultrasound reporting that came a part out of UAB, and it's based on kind of the breast data. And if you've heard any podcasts or talked to any people who've had breast biopsies done, there's something called BI-RAD, which stands for Breast Imaging Reporting and Data System. And UAB was very influential, the radiology department, in developing something called TI-RADS, which is Thyroid Imaging Reporting and Data System. And TI-RAD is based on ultrasonic features, and they have this huge grading system about how to grade thyroid nodules and whether or not to biopsy them, and not only whether or not they need a biopsy, biopsy, but also if you can follow them up and when they should have follow-up. So it's a very helpful thing, and this is brand new. It came out, I think the paper on this came out in April of 2017 or somewhere around that time. It's very, very new.
That's fascinating. Dr. Hughley, thyroid cancer, is there a screening recommendation? Is this controversial? Tell us about it.
There's not a screening for the general public that everyone can just have. It's based on basically risk factors. We mentioned earlier thyroid nodules being concerning. And once a nodule is discovered, whether a patient feels that or much more commonly now, it's being found incidentally on scans that are done for other reasons. As Dr. Buchek mentioned, if it's not an ultrasound that it's found on, oftentimes we will then get an ultrasound to look for any of those concerning characteristics that she mentioned to determine if that nodule that was found incidentally needs to be biopsied or, as we were discussing, removed surgically. The amount of imaging that's being done now in the head and neck for other reasons, whether it's head and neck cancer or neck pain or before spine surgery, is much higher than it's ever been. So a lot of these PET scans also are showing incidental thyroid nodules. So a lot are being found without the patient even knowing that there's a nodule present. And it's important to know that not all of those, just because they're present, actually need to be biopsied. Even when nodules are found on other imaging, just like Dr. Buchek mentioned before, there's a criteria to go on to determine if that needs to be worked up any farther or can be observed.
And Dr. Buchek, so let's start with some treatments if thyroid cancer is detected. So medicational or non-surgical to begin, whether you're talking radioactive iodine therapy or chemo-targeted medicational, give us a little bit of that adjuvant therapy.
Generally speaking, the treatment for thyroid cancer is going to be surgical in nature as a frontline therapy. Exceptions to that may include particularly advanced thyroid cancer, if it's involving the larynx or the airway, or particularly aggressive, like a variant called anaplastic thyroid cancer, in which case the prognosis is extremely poor. This is a very rare cancer, but we generally don't operate on that. But generally speaking, for the more common thyroid cancers like papillary thyroid cancer, follicular thyroid cancer, and medullary thyroid cancer, the treatment modality is going to be, for the most part, total thyroidectomy with some exceptions. For instance, if the thyroid cancer is extremely small, like less than a centimeter, you do not necessarily have to remove the other half of the gland. You at least just have to remove the side of the gland that the cancer is involved with. But for most cancers, it's going to be a complete thyroidectomy and potentially removing some lymph nodes that could be at risk if they're either clinically evident to have cancer in them, or if the cancer itself in the thyroid is large enough, we often will recommend getting some of the lymph nodes taken out as well. And then adjuvant therapy for papillary and follicular thyroid cancer is going to be radioactive iodine, and we usually recommend those for cancers that are at high risk. And high risk means any cancer that's grossly invaded outside of the thyroid gland into the surrounding structures. If it has metastasized to lymph nodes, either in the central neck around the thyroid or into the lateral neck nodes, we often recommend radioactive iodine, and then for any metastatic disease. Occasionally, we have used external beam radiation, but generally speaking, we don't use that for thyroid cancer. Radioactive iodine is the mainstay for adjuvant treatment.
Dr. Green, as Dr. Buchek got to my next question, in that whether it's metastatic or it's become systemic, tell us a little bit about the support that's available for those with thyroid cancer should they have to have a full-on total thyroidectomy.
Well, you know, thyroid cancer is interesting to me in that it can be a very non-aggressive cancer, like a very small papillary thyroid cancer, where the in a young person, a very small papillary thyroid cancer, the five-year survival rate is almost 99 to 100%. And I've even read studies that show that in young women, people who have thyroid cancer live longer than those who don't because they see a doctor more commonly and things like that. So it can be a very, very non-aggressive cancer. But then, like Dr. Bucic said, anaplastic thyroid cancer is one of the most aggressive human malignancies there is and kills people faster than virtually any other type of cancer. So thyroid cancer runs the whole spectrum of non-aggressive to extremely aggressive. And, you know, the support can vary significantly. And a lot of the support needed for thyroid cancer is kind of just understanding the risks that go with surgery. And the risks that go with thyroid cancer surgery can be significant. There can be risks to the recurrent laryngeal nerve, which controls the voice. There's risks to the parathyroid glands, which are near the thyroid gland and control calcium hemostasis in the body. There's bleeding risks. There's, you know, risks to the tone of your voice. We see a lot of singers that have nodules, and any type of change in their voice has profound implications to their job and their lifestyle. And so there's support groups, you know, for that, but most of the support is done through our other head and neck cancer supports. And so, and it's for people who have had big neck dissections for cancer and, you know, tracheal resection or laryngectomies for cancer, because people who have thyroid cancer and undergo thyroidectomy generally do really, really, really well for the most part.
Dr. Hughley, what about things like targeted therapy? Give us your blueprint for what you see as the future for thyroid cancer and treatments and also that support.
There are specific drugs that are being used occasionally. It's not sort of standard treatment. Tyrosine kinase inhibitors are one example that comes up, and our medical oncology friends are the experts with those and indications for when to use them. But one thing that almost all patients who will need that type of adjuvant therapy also need is multidisciplinary care. And so, just like with our other head and neck cancers, we were fortunate at UAB to participate in our multidisciplinary tumor board for head and neck tumors that includes endocrine tumors as well as the others. And that's, you know, meeting with the surgeons who take care of the head and neck tumors, as well as radiation when that's indicated, and adjuvant chemotherapy, including all of the newer directed therapies, which are occasionally given with as part of clinical trials, and occasionally given as adjuvant treatment in very rare settings for the more aggressive types of diseases, or sometimes not necessarily invasive and aggressive, but if there's an indication of a small recurrence, but it's in a very sensitive region, that, or in a patient who may not otherwise qualify or be a good candidate for surgery, that's when those agents are being used for thyroid cancer more frequently.
Dr. Green, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think Dr. Hughley hit it right on the head. You know, it's a very sensitive area, and in recurrences or metastatic disease, you know, we do rely heavily on our medical oncology colleagues and our nuclear medicine colleagues to help with delivering adjuvant therapies. Mostly, our adjuvant therapy for thyroid cancer is radioactive iodine that is tagged iodine that with radioactive entities that goes to the thyroid tissue wherever it is in the body and kills it with the radiation. Because as we know, the thyroid uptakes iodine, and so the iodine will be drawn into the thyroid cells, whether it's in the neck, in the thyroid bed, or even in the lung. And in small amounts, the radioactive agents that are tagged with this iodine can kill it. But we rely on our nuclear medicine, endocrinology, medical oncology colleagues to totally help us out with treating that.
So one thing I just wanted to add on a little different tangent as far as new technology and moving in the forefront. On the front end in detecting cancers, I think one of the exciting things that's being currently developed right now and a lot of new changes are in the genetic profiling of thyroid nodules and the testing there that's really giving us a lot better data preoperatively about whether or not these nodules are cancerous or not. So they can take some of the tissue from the fine needle aspiration, send that off, and run it for like 130 or 167 different transcription abnormalities and basically spit out the report that says whether or not the lesion is suspicious or not for cancer. And every, you know, year or two, they're really improving that technology into making a lot more specific, which I think helps everybody out in targeting who really needs surgery and who doesn't.
Dr. Buczek, tell other physicians what you'd like them to know about thyroid disease, thyroid cancer, and when to refer to a specialist.
That's a great question. I think thyroid nodules are extremely common and picked up by a lot of folks, family medicine practitioners. One thing I would say, if a nodule or a thyroid mass seems symptomatic, which is something we haven't talked a whole lot about, but if someone's complaining that they're having a hard time swallowing, if they're having hoarseness, if there's a lot of pain in their neck, and they have a big nodule, these are reasons to suspect that something potentially more aggressive is going on, or potentially that they have a large benign goiter that may need surgery. Those would be instances where I would recommend referring to an ENT surgeon who does thyroid surgery. On the other forefront, things I'd want people to know is making sure when they do thyroid ultrasounds and doing needle biopsies, that their institution is utilizing some of those tools for genetic testing, which is often a send-out test. Here at UAB, we end up sending it out to actually Texas to get it tested. But it can be really valuable and helpful to know who needs surgery and who we can simply observe.
Dr. Hughley, what do you like best about working with UAB and your team?
Well, our team is, as Dr. Green mentioned earlier, we have a great time working with each other. The three of us here today all work great together, but we also, as we've said many times today already, really enjoy working with our colleagues in radiation oncology, medical oncology, endocrinology, nuclear medicine, radiology, pathology. It's just very easy to pick up the phone and get in touch with somebody if there's a specific question about an image or about the treatment plan. We have our head and neck multidisciplinary tumor boards that meet regularly, and we actually talk with our colleagues about the cases that are not straightforward. And it's there are a lot of experts around who, for lack of a better term, you can just sort of either pick their brains or actually have them formally consult on patients. So there are a lot of people around who do the same thing as I do and also very complementary things to what I do that I can bounce ideas off of, learn things from, and share new ideas with.
Thank you all so much for being with us today. It's really great information. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.